Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 60-minute edition of the Left, Right and Center with me, Sanket Upadhyay. Two stories we are tracking on this show. Story number one, you would be comforted with the fact that, look, cases are finally coming down. Over the past few days, there has been a steady decline in the number of cases. Does this mean that we have reached a situation where the worst of this third wave is over? The honest answer is N-O, with caps lock on. The reason is, there are lower cases, but this is a result of fewer tests. That's not a wise thing to do. The government has rolled back its policy. It first said, change certain rules as far as testing is concerned, and then today, alarmed by the results, has decided to change the rule again, recommending and suggesting, let's go for more tests. Wasn't that COVID-19 management rule 1 or the basic 101 that you test more, test, track, treat? So if you put a cap on tests, obviously the numbers will come down and will give you a fake sense of calm and comfort that, look, cases are coming down. We cannot let our guard down. And don't look at those numbers. See, one horrible mistake that has been done by people is to call this wave mild. And the second horrible mistake could very well be this, where people may be forced to think the worst is behind us. It's not. We cannot let our guard down. And we'll explain with the help of graphics what we actually mean. Story number two, in about 20 minutes from now, 25 minutes. So this gentleman who makes fancy cars called Tesla, Mr. Elon Musk, tweeted when he was asked a question on when are Teslas coming to India. He says, once I'm able to overcome certain challenges in this country. So Tesla's tryst with India, where did Elon Musk hit the speed bump? What is the reality? What is the truth? Where is the problem? See, many state governments are offering him, come to our state. What if that is not the problem? Maybe the problem is something else. Maybe it's related to taxation. What will states do in that? A very detailed and comprehensive discussion coming up in just a short moment. But first, let's quickly take a look at these figures on the screen right now. A graphic representation of what exactly has happened. Do you see that little flat line, that plateau? That plateauing over the past 7 days is the number of tests. So suddenly our tests rose and then it has, like a tabletop, stopped. It has remained static. We are not testing more. Which is why perhaps we are trying to comfort ourselves in low positivity numbers. It's so misleading. The truth is right here on your screen right now. Now let's quickly take a look at the positivity rate. And this is where the real picture is. So if you see, the numbers may have come down in the graph. We may have been testing less, but the positivity rate, that means the number of people who tested and those who turned positive, that continues to increase. In a situation like this, an ideal response should be, yes, to test more. What did we end up doing? We started testing less. And that's a big, big mistake to make in the middle of a wave. Is this a horrible mistake? Mistake number one, for some people in some corners, to call wave three mild. And mistake number two is to go for a decline in tests. Let us come out of this fake sense of comfort. Let me introduce our guest this evening, Dr. Hemant Thakur, Chairman of the Maharashtra COVID Task Force, Dr. Anurag Mehrotra, Member of the COVID Task Force, Dr. Sushmita Roy Chaudhary, Director of Pulmonology, Fortis Hospital, Kolkata, Dr. Harsh Mahajan, Senior Vice President at Nat Health and Founder and Chief Radiologist at Mahajan Imaging, and Dr. Vishal Rao, Member of the Expert Committee, COVID Task Force, Government of Karnataka. Thank you very much. Important discussion. We'll begin with you, Dr. Mahajan, first. Because what is happening right now, and the reason why we get the sense of comfort of, less people getting infected by this virus is lesser tests. Do you think this is a big, big problem? First of all, I want to know from you our capabilities. Are we capable enough to test more and more?
Good evening, Sanket.
Good evening.
Yes, definitely. We are capable of testing more. As far as my knowledge goes, we can do at least 2.5 million tests a day, a mix of RT-PCR and rapid antigen tests. And during the second wave, I think we've kind of maximum we've done is about 1.6 or 1.7 million. So there is capacity that is still there in the system.
Sorry, sir. Just for perspective, 16 lakh tests is what we have done, but we have a capacity of 25 lakh tests a day.
That's right.
Yes, please carry
That's
on.
That's right. Yeah. So there is capacity which we have in the system. Now, having said that, there is no doubt that testing forms the very backbone of our fight against COVID. And if we look at the ICMR advisory, which was issued on the 10th of this month, it seems that it has been taken as a directive rather than an advisory. And states are taking it literally word for word. And what they've done, and which is what, you know, this letter from the Additional Secretary of Health, which has been sent yesterday, attempts to point out that the idea was not that you stop testing totally and only test as per the ICMR advisory, the symptomatic, which is, of course, there is some prioritization that was done by ICMR that the symptomatic, irrespective of what you feel, must be tested. Those above 60 years of age who come in contact with a lab positive case must be tested. Those with comorbidities who are at higher risk of developing serious disease and come in contact must be tested. Where I think the problem arose is on the asymptomatic testing, where it was said that asymptomatic contacts who are below 60 years of age need not be tested.
But that doesn't make sense.
And that's where the dramatic fall in numbers has come.
And that doesn't make sense, you know, because an asymptomatic patient is going to go and perhaps spread the infection to a person who may get who may be a symptomatic patient.
Yes, that is right. But you know, my interpretation of this was that everyone has been predicting that we are going to get a huge surge and the peak is going to be huge. So this was more or less a preemptive measure, probably an advisory by the ICMR saying that, hey, do test those who are more at risk and who are symptomatic.
Sure.
And bring the asymptomatic lower down in the category.
Sure. Okay.
One particular element where I do disagree with what the ICMR has said is that asymptomatic people who get admitted into a hospital for surgery or for some other reason should not be tested. I think this is where a modification needs to be made very quickly, because they can spread, asymptomatic people, we know, spread disease. They can spread it to the healthcare workers.
True.
They can spread it to other patients who are in the hospital
and
who are generally in an immunocompromised state.
Absolutely. Dr. Hemant, I want to come to you now. So an advisory was taken as gospel and actually implemented on the ground, because of which we are now in a situation where many people in the country actually feel, and you know, the problem is, for us, starving on any good news, we tend to latch on to anything that is positive, that is human nature. But this is a false positive in the world of COVID.
So, do you need my opinion on that?
Yes, absolutely,
you still have
sir.
A question?
No, Dr. Hemant, your opinion.
At the outset, I'm not the chairman of the task force. I'm just part of the think tank. But I must say that in COVID, everybody has been thinking on their feet. If advisories change, if thought processes change, it's only for the better. Hmm. Now, this third wave of Omicron is I came, I saw, I smothered. And there, everybody in the city where it is passing on faster than you can say Jack Robinson. Hmm. So if the government says, do not test the asymptomatic, the government did not say keep the contacts into work again. The government said keep the contacts under observation for 5 days before they can go out and test them only if they get symptomatic. So I think if you are starving for good news, you're also starving for bad news that somebody has heard. No, I think the task force, center, state, everywhere is thinking on their feet. If you're going to waste the tests on people who have had contacts, a 60-year-old man and his wife stay together and there are five people in contact and these people are asymptomatic, you just observe them. The fact that Omicron is extremely transmissible is going to come and caress everybody. The reason I'm using the word caress is for the Omicron, the disease is mild. Having said that, excuse me, the Omicron alone doesn't exist. There's also 20% of Delta. So what I want you to tell your viewers, don't take it lightly as far as disease is concerned, as far as prevention is concerned, as far as precaution is concerned. But if you keep wasting kits on the younger people who are likely to be positive, today 9 out of 10 Omicrons are completely asymptomatic or don't even remember that they had a bad
Dr. Hemant, if you allow me, I understand the point that you're making. But the thing is, how in a country like India, where if you will not test, and if an asymptomatic person never comes across this realization or fact that he may be in possession of the COVID-19, you know, latest variant.
If he is a contact, he will be secluded for 5 days. But you can't stop an asymptomatic person on the road and test. For the simple reason, in a country with a huge population.
Then why change the policy now, sir? Because the original concept was test, test and test.
That's all the question was when you wanted to trace when there was Delta. Now, whom are you going to trace and whom are you going to apprehend and whom are you going to catch?
Okay.
The Omicron is like a tidal wave. It is just sweeping through the community. In fact, it is the vaccination, the community vaccination that we've all been waiting for. What you need to do is, along with Omicron, highlight the fact. We still have 20% of Delta. We still have some Omicron variants, which can give trouble. So precaution, masking, etc. must always be emphasized and carried out.
Exactly. But you know, Dr. Anurag Mehrotra, you're a member of the COVID task force of Uttar Pradesh. The point exactly is this. If there is 20% of Delta, and if there is this provision that, okay, don't test, go for isolation, don't test. What if these contacts go ahead and spread Delta and not Omicron, which according to Dr. Thakur is mild? And now there is a change in the policy. Now the government goes back to its original position saying test, test more.
As a clinician, we must understand the treatment of any disease is decided by its severity. How much people are getting affected, how many are getting very sick, and how much is the mortality. In present way, we are seeing mortality is not very high. In fact, it is just like a cold. Having said that, I will again say, that any person, you know, the persons having comorbid conditions, those who are immunocompromised, must take care of themselves. Any person who is coming into contact of a person having COVID and if he or she is immunocompromised, they must be tested. Other thing which has to be kept in mind, any person who is suffering from COVID and he knows he is having COVID must look for his symptom very closely. As Dr. Thakur was saying, 20% of the patient is still having Delta, and we have also seen in our setup, some persons are coming with classical CT changes of Delta. So those person, if their thing are not resolving by the third day, they should go for the testing. Keep watch on your symptoms, and all the immunocompromised patient with the comorbidity must take precautions, must have COVID appropriate behavior, and if they have some symptom or they have come in contact with the person who was having COVID, they should get tested.
No, Dr. Mehrotra, you know, I just wanted to understand. Let me go to Dr. Rao also. See, Dr. Hemant raised an important point. He said if you would keep, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Hemant, you said that if we keep wasting these kits, these testing kits on people we know may get infected now who are otherwise healthy, people who do not have comorbidities.
Contacts, if for 5 days do not develop any symptoms, don't need testing.
Okay.
It's only if they become symptomatic that you need to test them, because then you need to apprehend them and quarantine them for a little longer time so they may not spread
it. Okay, so what...
But remember, just isolation is not enough. Omicron is beating all these barriers. Omicron is flying faster than the wind and easier to transmit than even the water vapor that comes.
Correct.
So we have to deal with the Omicron. You cannot treat and test the whole community. You have to test the comorbids. You have to test the symptomatic. And if the government is changing its policy every day, it indicates that the government is thinking. It's a thinking government. They are realizing they are thinking.
No, why? I get your point. But again, you know, the whole point of Dr. Rao, asymptomatic people then becoming, you know, basically not knowing. Ignorance cannot be bliss, Dr. Rao. So then by that, by this logic, what will happen is our daily count of COVID-19 cases may stabilize. And then again, we'll get this false sense of comfort in terms of data crunching that see now it's stabilized, plateaued. However, in reality, if I have to take Dr. Hemant's, comment very, very seriously, this basically means that there may be many, many, many more people. Perhaps
there
the
are.
Figure that... The figure that we have right now, Dr. Rao, it must be into 10 or into 5 or I don't know how much. We don't even know the scale of the spread, Dr. Rao.
I completely agree, Sanket. I would like to reiterate 2 points here. And with all respect what Dr. Hemant and Dr. Mahajan said very relevantly. Today, obviously, one aspect that is, I think, being misinterpreted would be to say that ICMR said that you need not treat, but not should not treat, should not test. I'm sorry. The aspect has to be understood by people and states and to be interpreted adequately is not to say that I should not test the asymptomatic, but they said need not to overcome the unnecessary pressure on the system as what Dr. Hemant rightly pointed out. The bigger concern also has been in the discussion in various states on self-test kits or even rapid antigen test kits not being reported. So now naturally this gives a lot of under-reporting. That's one aspect of it. As long as currently if you look at the trends, the oxygenated beds, the ICU beds are very, very minimal. And that's something that I think every ministry in the state is watching very, very closely. Now at this juncture, it's also important to look at, let's say, the best comparative data from South Africa, which has published, which has been shown, showing that do not assume that Omicron is just another flu. If the hospitalization rates and the oxygenation rates in Delta was nearly 20% in South Africa, it was about 4% in Omicron. And if you look at the population of South Africa, it must be almost similar to that of Karnataka. And the vaccination rate there was half of that of South Africa. So there are a lot of dynamics to be taken into consideration. However, from the beginning of the wave of South Africa, if you look at around November 11th when it started till December 12th, when it reached the peak at about almost 40,000 cases per day, it rapidly declined. The trend seemed to be possibly similar to say that there is a rapid decline and increase and a decline, which is what I think Dr. Hemant and Dr. Mahajan were alluding to. Which is what predictive models of IIT Kanpur, Indian Institute of Science, Indian Statistical Institute are all showing. Having said that, that does not give us the leeway to say, let's under number it, let's be less cautious, let's try and lower our guards, because it gives a wrong message.
Yes, Dr. Rao, that's exactly my point. What happens is, and unfortunately, this is the reality, whether in our response as far as governments are concerned, or individuals in their response to this wave. The moment you get this false sense that, look, numbers are coming down, everybody, there will be an easing of all restrictions. From double masking, it will become single mask or no mask, right? Governments tend to slacken a bit. That is how the human mind works. Now, isn't that going to be the biggest challenge? That we will basically be underestimating and under-calculating the extent of the third wave. Dr. Roy Chaudhary, I want to come to you now. What's your assessment?
See, as a clinician on the ground, and as I see it, I go with what Dr. Thakur is saying. You know, numbers are not important to people. what is important is whether they are being affected or not. You'll be surprised mm-hmm. how many patients come through the clinic who've had symptoms, who've not even bothered to think that they've had COVID, but they're actually coming to me a couple of weeks later because their cough isn't going away. If I were to appeal, I would appeal just one thing and one thing alone. If there was something like a temporary law that could be made, was if compulsory masking could be made a law, these undernumberings would go away because we would stop spreading. There's nothing else you can do in a country that is so varied in their understanding, in their responsibilities, and in the way that they consider everything.
Dr. Roy Choudhury, I mean, you're asking lawmakers to basically...
No. I think Dr. Roy Choudhury has hit the nail on the head.
She has, absolutely.
And yes.
We need to see, mask,
you are looking
mask and
at,
mask
you're
for
looking
a week.
At yeah. your glass half empty. We are looking at it half full.
Yeah, you but at the point is, who will make this law? Yeah. The very same politicians who don't wear the mask themselves.
So we need to mask for the next 4 to 6 weeks, and this Omicron or Delta, all these questions will go away, because as clinicians, we really don't know whether we treat Delta or whether we treat. You will be surprised that right now in my hospital, one third of the cases are in the ICU, which everyone said was Omicron and it would do nothing to patients. Mm. So, you know, we need to be very simple in our understanding, simple in our approaches towards treating this viral pandemic that we are dealing with.
I think that's a very important point.
While we can show light at the end of the tunnel, we must use a carrot and stick approach, because it's only with the carrot and stick approach that we'll negotiate the sliding down half of the Omicron wave. True enough, the Omicron wave has peaked, but we are still just over the peak. The next fortnight is going to be very trying, very pressing. And if we don't mask, you must ask for the heaviest fine so that the country and the community can get saved. I think this is the message that NDTV should give.
Absolutely. Mask Up is a campaign which is going on NDTV, but this is equally a campaign for all those lawmakers you feel should ideally be making this law. Well, they must make this law masking up themselves. Thank you very much. Very quickly. I think Dr. Mahajan wanted
Sanket,
to come.
Yeah, Sanket, I want to say the numbers we need to be concerned about are those with serious disease, those who are in hospital, in ICUs. I think the overall numbers and really the asymptomatic numbers may not matter so much. And if we are doing wrong, we will see the symptomatic numbers going up.
Correct.
If the asymptomatic people are not following COVID appropriate behavior
That's
and actually
point.
Spreading disease around.
That's the point. If there will be no testing in offices, they will be allowed to come. And then, obviously, they will spread. It will become a super spreader event. They will spread it to people who are symptomatic, and the cycle goes on. Mask Up as a very good advice coming in from Dr. Roy Choudhury. Thank you very much to all of you all for joining us. Taking a short break at this moment. When we come back, Mr. Elon Musk and his Tesla, what really are those challenges that he's facing? Are they really challenges? And more importantly, can the state governments who are trying to offer him a solution can do so? We'll try to decipher what really this whole story is all about that everyone seems to be talking. Back in a moment. So Tesla's tryst with India, where did Elon Musk hit the speed bump? First, let me explain what has happened. So here is the thing. Elon Musk got a tweet from Pranay Patole, who's going to join us in just a short moment. And Pranay Patole asked him a question. He said, "Yo, Elon Musk, any further update as to when Tesla will launch in India? They're pretty awesome and deserve to be in every corner of the world." Elon Musk then replied to this tweet saying, "Still working through a lot of challenges with the government." Then what happened? Well, here is what followed after this tweet. 6 states tried to woo Tesla after Musk had flagged challenges with the government. Tesla had urged the center to withdraw social welfare surcharge on 10% on electric cars. Telangana, Bengal, Maharashtra, Punjab, Tamil Nadu and Karnataka invited Musk to set up a plant. Telangana said, "We'll be happy to partner with Tesla." Maharashtra said, "We'll provide you with all the necessary help." Navjot Singh Sidhu said, "I invite Elon Musk. Punjab model will create, a best platform." West Bengal said, "Drop here." We have the best infra. Karnataka says, Mr. Musk, come to Karnataka. And this went on and on and on. So the big question that we are asking, and these are the big questions, very, very important actually, while all of this is happening. Question number one on your screen. What is the exact nature of the challenge being faced by Elon Musk and Tesla? That we still do not know with great amount of clarity. Question number two. Does Elon Musk want an import duty waiver for Tesla? Is that what he wants? Question three. Won't a waiver or a tax rebate or a discount or whatever he wants for one manufacturer be unfair to the others? Question four. Does Tesla only want to sell cars in India and not make in India? Because if that is the case, then all these invites that are coming from the States, they mean nothing. Let me now introduce Mr. Pawan Goenka. Mr. Goenka is a well-known face, former MD of Mahindra and Mahindra Limited. Mr. Goenka, Tesla owner Elon Musk in a tweet has said that he's facing great amount of challenges. What, according to you, could be the problem because of which the States have now come in to help him?
Yeah. So it depends on what Mr. Elon Musk is looking for. If he's looking for duty reduction, then that's not a state government subject. That's a central government subject. And central government has to take an overall view on it, taking into consideration the policy that India has for import duties for automobiles and the desire to increase electric vehicle penetration in India. So there's some balancing the central government may be looking at thinking about. If it's a question of how to incentivize setting up a plant in India for Tesla, then that's very much a state subject. And the states can offer land, the states can offer different kind of shops for setting up a plant. And correct. Every state obviously is buying for that. Two or three states have reached out to him. I saw that in the papers today. And that therefore both central government and state government have a role to play in making it happen. I do not know what Mr. Musk is alluding to in terms of saying I'm facing difficulty.
Sure, sure. Now, Mr. Goenka, I wanted to ask you what, according to you, is that big moment, that big horizon for the smooth adaptation of EVs, electric vehicles. I remember you saying that we've been slow to adapt.
See, again, it depends on segment, Sandesh. As I said earlier, the two-wheelers now are pretty much over the hump. This year, last year, we sold about 250,000 or thereabouts two-wheelers. And I see that number doubling every year for the next 4 to 5 years. And I would not be at all surprised if 2025-26, we sell maybe 3.5 million electric two-wheeler, which will be about 16-17% of the overall market. So that's, I think, pretty much in the bag. There are enough new players that have come in. The big guys have stayed away so far, but they will, I'm sure, jump in. But a lot of new players who have come in and making good, affordable two-wheelers. When it comes to three-wheelers, story is similar. In this case, even the big players like Mahindra, Piaggio, Kinetic are in the game. And there are many small players who are coming in. Vehicles are very affordable, cost less than owning a diesel or a CNG three-wheeler. And therefore, that also should go very rapidly. And I will not be at all surprised if we see 20-25% penetration by 2025-26. Buses, again, we will find more and more desire to go to buses. And we have good products available through our two manufacturers and also some foreign manufacturers who are playing in the bus segment. The only segment that I said earlier that is slow to take off is the passenger vehicle segment. And there, everybody has kind of announced their intention to launch major projects. Everybody announced huge investments into the passenger vehicle segment. But we don't have specific launch dates yet. And what India needs are multiple products in the 8 lakh to 12 lakh price point. So hatchback at about 8 lakh and a sedan at about 12 lakh. We have one each right now. We need to have multiple products from multiple manufacturers. And once that happens, I see no reason why it won't take off.
True.
Because consumers do want choices. They don't want to have to choose from a choice of one. So that will probably be the last one in India to take off. But the global market for passenger vehicles now is almost 3 million vehicles a year.
Yeah.
Out of which India probably sold last year about 10,000 units. So that's India has a lot of catching up to do.
Lot of passenger vehicle. I agree, a lot of catching up to do. But it's interesting that you mentioned the range as 8 lakhs to 12 lakhs because the company that we are talking about here, you won't even get a nut for that price. Tesla cars are way more
expensive.
So
that will remain a niche segment in India. So it's like, you know, how many luxury vehicles can India consume? Not too many. And if you are talking in that price point, you will have few people who would obviously want to own those high-end electric vehicles, but that number will be very, very small, and that number won't be enough for any company to probably put a lot of investment on the ground to make a fully integrated manufacturing facility in India, unless they decide, and which they can, unless they decide to make India a manufacturing base for Southeast Asia and export from here.
Okay, I think that's an important point. You're saying that unless a manufacturer like Tesla makes India the international manufacturing hub, that means they manufacture it here and then sell it across the world. Do you think that this is a possibility worth considering?
Yeah, I very much think so. Because see, the PLI scheme applies to all shapes and sizes and price points of vehicle. Whether it's a 5 lakh vehicle or a 50 lakh vehicle or 2 crore vehicle, PLI scheme is applicable. So as long as the manufacturers are able to meet the requirement of PLI vehicle, and PLI scheme is designed primarily for electric vehicles. IC engine vehicles are not covered in the PLI scheme. Hmm. And therefore, if these manufacturers can actually invest here and make PLI, use a vehicle that qualify for PLI benefit, they can get as much as 13, 14, 15% of subsidy from the government and make the vehicle very affordable for export. And when it comes to export, there will not be any import duty disadvantage, because whatever import duty is paid for importing components will be set off when they're exporting the vehicle.
I think that's an important point. Mr. Goenka, thank you very much. Pleasure talking to you. Let's now introduce our panelist, Dr. Shashi Panja, Minister of State for Women and Child Development and Social Welfare, Government of West Bengal. Mr. Vinkesh Gulati, President of the Federation of Automobile Dealers Association. Pranay Patole, he's a software developer at Tata Consultancy Services. It's his tweet that set all of this off. So, Mr. Patole, thank you very much for joining us. And Siddharth Vinayak Patankar, Editor-in-Chief of Car and Bike. Thank you very much, Siddharth. Such a pleasure to see you after so long. Siddharth, let's begin with you first. Elon Musk and his tryst, Tesla's tryst with India. You've seen the arguments that are floating around. What is your take?
All right, let's try and get some perspective on this. Firstly, Sanket, should Tesla come to India? Sure, I think Indian consumers deserve all the choices. Will Tesla come to India? Like any manufacturer, like any company, it's going to look to see if it makes good business sense for it to do so or not. Pavan was talking just a little while ago about how the luxury segment has yet to really take off, is unlikely to really take off. I mean, we were just talking a few days ago about how all the luxury cars sold in India in a whole year is less than what gets sold in China in 1 month. And so really, you know, our entire automobile sales, like the manufacturing of cars in India, stands at about 3 million units. In China, they sold 3 million luxury cars last year, more than. So the point is that when you are comparing to such markets where the options are a whole lot more lucrative, firstly, is this worth Tesla's while? I think that's what we need to ask. Secondly, the point about making in India. Mm. From the government's point of view, it makes total sense. Look, we want to try and get all the manufacturing here. We want to have the jobs here. We want to also have a little bit of localization, which benefits local suppliers and benefits the overall industry. I totally get that argument. I support that argument. But from Tesla's point of view, to play devil's advocate, here's the thing. That company has about 1 million units manufacturing capacity, give or take, that's already in place between its plants in China and the United States. Mm. It's also adding 500,000 units annual capacity plant in Berlin that's going to service the European market. And in that kind of a scenario, does Tesla really require another big plant? The simple answer is it does not. And so what we are trying to sort of chase here is the celebrity of Tesla. It's the celebrity of Mr. Musk. It's about getting that one prize crown jewel here to India. Mm. But at what cost? Because even if you offer manufacturing SOPs, the question is, does Tesla need that manufacturing? I think that's what we have to ask, because the Southeast Asian market, not huge for luxury cars. The European market, covered by the Berlin plant. China, the huge behemoth of a market, already covered by the plant in China. Certainly can't import cars into China anyway. Mm. And of course, the United States, already covered with the plants in California. So what are we really aiming for? Which is why what Tesla is looking for are SOPs when it comes to import duties. Here is where I think there is an opportunity to say, look, you want certain SOPs, they have to come with preconditions. Are those preconditions linked to manufacturing, or are they linked to giving back to the country in terms of technology transfer, mm-hmm. or maybe having the sourcing of components?
But you know, the problem, Siddharth, over there is going to be that you make an exception for one company. What happens to the others? I mean, there are others who are playing by the rule in this country.
It certainly can't be for one. And I think that's why everybody is watching this very closely. You've seen manufacturers like Mercedes-Benz and Hyundai announcing now finally that they will assemble electric cars in India as early as starting this year. I think the reason those announcements were even delayed in the first place was because of this wait and watch to say, hey, what's going to happen with Tesla? Because whatever happens with Tesla, of course, applies to everybody else. It simply has to.
Correct. Okay. Pranay Patole, welcome. What forced you to come up with that tweet? And you know, I'll tell you a little secret. You've got Mr. Gulati right here, who has a thing or two to say about your tweets as well.
Why did he
choose to respond to you?
I'm a big admirer of Elon Musk, to be very honest, and I've been following him for past 5 years, and we even chat on DMs, like direct message on Twitter, and I really admire, and he's a fantastic guy. What he is doing with SpaceX, revolutionizing the entire EV industry, trying to make life multiplanetary, and with his boring company, he's trying to solve traffic problems that we have been facing since ages. And with Neuralink, he's also trying to solve some brain and spine problems. So that is quite big impact he's targeting, and I really admire him. So we have quite a lot of interactions on Twitter.
Wow. When did that happen? I didn't know that he's so approachable.
Well, he has 70 million followers, so he's obviously very hard to, you know, approach. But, you know, I got his attention. He was intrigued by my tweets, and I'm a long-term Tesla supporter. I'm a long-term SpaceX supporter. I like rocket science. I like space. And so, you know, he liked my tweets. So we chat back and forth nowadays.
Nice. You're making it sound so casual, no? I have lunch and then I talk to Elon Musk and then I tweet and then he replies.
No, that is how it is, actually. That is how it is. Initially, when he used to reply to me, I was like crazy. I mean, I used to show it to my mom and dad, like, see, Elon Musk replied to me, the Elon Musk replied to me. And now it's like very casual.
Brilliant. You see, the thing is, Mr. Gulati feels that all of this was set up. Mr. Gulati, why did you tweet that? You question on why Mr. Patole, why a response to Mr. Patole's tweet?
So, hi, Sankar.
Yeah, it could be like a very simple and natural thing to have happened.
So, hi, Sankar. Thanks for having me. Obviously, see, there are a lot of customers who are writing to Tesla. I see at least 100 tweets in a month going to Elon that when the Tesla is coming to India, and it's not today. It's been for the past, 4 or 5 years this is happening. Since I feel 3 years back, they started booking Teslas for India. There are a lot of customers who have booked and still waiting for the launch. So a lot of tweets are going. But when Mr. Patole tweets and Elon responses to a tweet, which was going on in the social media for long, you start thinking, why is this happening? And that is why I wrote specifically, is it instigated? So basically, Tesla for the past 1 year has gone through ARAI. They have gone to MORTH, heavy industry. There are team members who are interacting with the heavy ministries and all. But I don't know what happened because of this tweet that Elon has to give a message.
What's your feeling? You're saying that he's trying to put pressure with the help of this tweet. I mean, he's been successful in having us debate this, but... What do you feel? What is the objective? To put pressure on the government?
He's trying to put the pressure on the government, because the government normally, this current government is trying to say that it's ease of business, wanting FDI, increasing manufacturing and all that, supporting the businessmen. So indirectly, the tweet means that the kind of support what Elon Musk needs for Tesla is not being given by the Indian government.
Okay. Dr. Shashi Panja is also with us, Minister in the West Bengal government, one of the governments in this country who said, come, set up your shop here. Dr. Panja, the only problem is that Mr. Elon Musk does not want to do that. As of this moment, it appears he only wants to sell his cars. And for that, he does not, and you know, whatever he wants is out of your jurisdiction. So do you feel that this is just a feel-good tweet that all state governments are writing to him, whereas this is something he doesn't even want?
No, it just reflects our aspirations. And actually, the person whom we are discussing has also not yet made clear, or rather, the government of India probably knows, but we are not sure. But we can merely speculate. And I am not an automobile expert, but it was a very interesting discussion, I must say. And having heard the previous speakers, yes, you know, what we can actually aspire for, or is that there seems to be some difficulty that he is facing with the union government, which of course is not very clear. But is that something, there is a part which Mr. Goenka also mentioned where the state can play a role. So that is what we were merely mentioning.
No, Dr. Panja, see, Bengal. The state can play a role.
We have a land bank. If you
correct. So the state can play a role when he decides to manufacture here, where he needs your land bank. As of this moment, it appears he does not need the land bank. Siddharth Vinayak Patankar here says that it doesn't make sense for him to set up this shop here. Why would he want to do that?
No. It's not very clear. No, it's not very clear. We just wanted to express our interest and that he's welcome to Bengal. Now, if, you know, it can be so. I may merely speculate that having seen he is definitely a high-end electrical car manufacturer.
Yeah.
And if even in India, cannot afford that, maybe he will customize to the Indian market. It could be so. Mm. And if it's so that he decides on manufacturing, so why not in Bengal? And, you know, once it comes to something like manufacturing, we can think of the ancillary units which would also develop, which actually, you know, gets the stimulus and generation of jobs. Sure. That's what the state is thinking of. I think it's fair enough for us to think, yes, we can look for industry, we can look for some jobs. And that's what, I mean, we are industry friendly.
Absolutely.
And that's the scenario we wanted to
So I think as far as state governments are concerned, Siddharth, this was a great opportunity for them to position and market themselves and land themselves as you know, investment friendly, investor friendly, business friendly states. But the requirement of this gentleman seems to be very different. Now, I want to ask you, is there not an element of unfairness if the government does go ahead and agree with Mr. Elon Musk's demands? Because, you know, you've got other international manufacturers who are manufacturing with these Indian terms and conditions.
Oh, absolutely right. And especially when you talk about electric, right? Because a lot of manufacturers have tried to say that, hey, when it comes to electric, if you want to be sort of seen as progressive as a country, you want to increase the number of electric vehicles on the road, maybe you need special separate policies for electric. It's something that the government hasn't quite bitten on, right? We haven't really seen, yes, there's the FAME scheme, but let's not just get caught up in only that, because when you talk about serious incentives for electric vehicles, then you start making comparisons to, like, you know, the kind of schemes we saw in China or in Norway or even in the United States in the past. Some of the schemes are actually unwinding now globally, while we have still not really gone, you know, fully head on into one. The point about the state governments is interesting, and you pretty much mirrored what I was thinking, that look, this is a great opportunity to also talk to the rest of that community. It's not just about, now I don't know the motivation behind what each state government was thinking, putting this on Twitter. But having said that, if there is a more shrewd sort of an approach to this, remember, even someone like a Hyundai or Kia, you know, the Hyundai Motor Group has a massive manufacturing capacity in India, is already facing a capacity crunch. When they have to start looking at serious numbers with electric vehicles, Tata Motors has hived off its electric vehicle business as a separate subsidiary. Hmm. When they start looking at big numbers, anybody you talk about, there would be a requirement for some fresh capacity. When Toyota and Maruti finally get their act together and jump into the electric bandwagon, at that point, yes, being progressive, being investor friendly, and maybe being EV friendly, is certainly a great image to have for a state government, because there is going to be some amount of, I'm not saying all the manufacturing capacity today is useless to EVs. A lot of it can be rejigged. But what I'm saying is that when it comes to greenfield capacity for electric vehicles. It's not just about Tesla. You know, Tesla is the iPhone of the car world, but is it the highest selling electric car? Not necessarily. Yes, for a while it is. But what I'm trying to say is that there's a whole lot of other companies. They're all watching. At some point, India will become hot for this space. And yes, I think the point made by the representative from the Bengal government is very valid, that we all know Mr. Musk is the kind of person who might one day wake up and say, yes, I got to do a budget car for emerging markets. At that point, does India become the obvious choice? Perhaps yes.
Very, very significant. Mr. Patole, I'm going to come back to you in just a short moment. There's some questions on the Koo app also. Deepak Kumar Sharma writes, Tesla's tryst with India is... for a very long time now, with nearly 3 years of talks with the government and four states approaching to form its or make its factory. Though its challenge stays with import exceptions as EVs require sustainable platform for initial development. We have Mr. Sudhanshu Singh also, who says Tesla's response in various tweets shows the orthodox thinking of the central government in building relations with the states. Now, Pranay, see, the point is, you admire Mr. Elon Musk. He talks to you, as you said. I so envy you. You also love Tesla Motors, that car. You would want to see it here. But see, it has to make sense. In the larger scheme of things, would you want a more sustained way of that model coming to India? Or the phenomena called Tesla and the personality called Elon Musk must empower through any decision-making process of this country. I think this is what it is. To get a personality called Elon Musk to invest in India at any cost, or to get investment on your terms.
See, as we all know, in my opinion, that EVs are the future, and EVs will be big eventually. So I think what Elon Musk wants is for the government to initially reduce the import duties so that he can bring some Tesla cars and see how the Indian market performs. And then maybe within a few years, if he sees that Indian market has big potential, which it has, obviously. And
but Pranay, will that not be unfair? You just heard the discussion. Will that not be unfair to the people who are already manufacturing in India? He is not the only EV manufacturer.
That is true, but he is one of the big EV manufacturers. And when you think about Tesla, all you see is EVs. When you say Mercedes, you have a petrol, ICE engine cars, you have hybrid vehicles, but there is no such EV vehicle. So Tesla is all about electric. And I think Tesla is, as Siddharth rightly said, that Tesla is the iPhone of car industry, EV industry.
It's just that iPhone is also going to be manufactured in this country, by the way.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. Yes.
So why shouldn't Tesla be manufactured? Mr. Gulati, your closing comments.
So Sanket, basically what I'll tell you, if you see the last year figures, there were only 96 or 100 electric vehicle registered in India, with all the four big players of Mercedes, Audi, Volvo and all that. See, when you talk of Tesla, it means if it comes to India, it won't come at a product price which is below 50 lakhs or 60 lakhs. And that is not what India is. India is a market of 3 lakh vehicle cars per month. And in that 3 cars, there are only 3,000 cars which sell at that price count or above that price point. So why would Indian government be give that importance to them? If they agree to come up with a product around 10 lakh rupees for electric vehicle, that is where India is lagging, and that is what...
No, but then, you know, Mr.
said.
Gulati, it's a little unfair to expect if the manufacturer on his own decides that this is good for my business and comes up with a model, one can understand. But to say that, look, we need something in the 8 lakh price range, so Tesla must manufacture something worth 8 lakhs.
My point was, if they need some support, they should at least cover up what India wants as of today. If they want to sell a product which is 60 lakh to 1 crore, which goes to the niche market with the HNIs, why would an India government be interested in?
That's
Mercedes
very important.
Is selling an EV at 1 crore. Even if Tesla comes at a crore, they'll be able to sell 1,000 vehicles per month. And there are customers for that. So for that 1,000 vehicle, it won't affect a lot
seeing our India automobile product.
Okay, last comment. Yes, last comment, Siddharth, please. Running out of time.
Yeah, I just want to quickly make this point that, look, today the government already offers a particular option to all manufacturers, not just one, to bring in cars up to about 2,400 units a year that you don't have to homologate. Yes, you still have to pay the customs duty, no doubt, but it allows you to bring these cars in with, you know, all the hassle of red tape being cut completely out and being able to approach the market very quickly. A lot of the EVs we have seen driving in the last 1 year, yes, they cost about a crore, but they've used that scheme to their advantage. If Tesla wants to test waters, wants to see the reaction of Indian, you know, usage on our roads and Indian consumers, use that scheme, bring in the cars, just import them. And I can guarantee you they will still sell out, just like we've seen the Audi e-tron or the Jaguar I-Pace or the Mercedes EQC. They're
very
all electric cars. They're all sold out, and they've sold out in a much shorter time than expected. Very. Are you telling me you can't sell 2,000 Teslas in the first year, given all the hype? I'm pretty sure they'll be sold out in less than 6 months.
Less than 6 months? I would say...
6 weeks.
6 weeks, exactly. Thank you very much to all of you all. Pranay Patole, can you please use your influence on Mr. Elon Musk to ask him to give us an interview? We'll be more than happy to know from him what he thinks.
Definitely. I'm trying to get an interview with him.
Okay. Nice talking to you. Thank you very much. We come to the end of this broadcast. Good night and goodbye.